From WTIP News, this is the North Shore Weekend News Roundup. I'm Jay Anderson, and here are some of the stories we've been following this week. The National Park Service announced Wednesday it will hold public meetings in coming weeks on what, if any, action to take to keep Isle Royale's wolf population from fading to zero. Isle Royale National Park Superintendent Phyllis Green said meetings will be held in Duluth, St. Paul, and Michigan to explain the island's wolf predicament, offer new information on the issue, and take public comments on what the Park Service might do about it. The Duluth News Tribune reports a debate is expanding in the scientific community, the public, and among Park Service officials on whether humans should intervene to rescue an isolated wolf population that some experts say appears doomed because of genetic inbreeding. The lack of new bloodlines is causing physical deformities that are affecting wolves' life expectancy. Others say climate change may have a major impact on the island's wolves. Park Service officials say they have three basic options: doing nothing, waiting for the wolves to die off and then reintroduce new wolves, or introduce new wolves soon while some wolves are still present. So far, however, there has been no official plan of action. Wolves on the 45-mile-long island in Lake Superior have been steadily declining in recent years. Scientists involved in an ongoing study of the predator-prey relationship between wolves and moose on the island say wolves may need a genetic rescue by introducing new wolves from another area. Without such human intervention, they say the island's wolves may dwindle to none, possibly within a few years. Wednesday, November 20th, is the Duluth meeting date. It's 3 to 5 p.m. at the EPA Lab Building. Scientists say a water sample taken from Lake Michigan's Sturgeon Bay in Wisconsin has tested positive for Asian carp DNA. It's the second time that genetic material from the invasive fish has been detected in the lake. The other positive hit was from Chicago's Calumet Harbor. The Sturgeon Bay sample was among 50 collected in May and analyzed recently at a University of Notre Dame laboratory. Biologist Chris Jurdy says the positive hit was for silver carp, a species notorious for leaping from the water. U.S. senators from Great Lakes states are urging quick action to stop the movement of Asian carp. Senators Amy Klobuchar and Al Franken joined 14 other senators from Great Lakes states, sending a letter Wednesday to the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. The senators want fast action to stop the invasive fish from swimming up the Chicago Sanitary and Ship Canal into the lakes. The letter was sent one day after news broke that Asian carp DNA had been detected for the first time in Lake Michigan waters off Wisconsin. Under orders from Congress, the Army Corps has been studying the problem of invasive carp making their way to the world's largest freshwater system for several years. The Corps is scheduled to release a plan to block the fish in January. A long-awaited updated environmental review of the proposed Polymet copper-nickel mine in northern Minnesota has been delayed by last month's federal government shutdown. The review was to be released on the 22nd of November, but the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources said the release has been pushed back 2 weeks to December 6. The DNR says the federal shutdown came during a critical final review of the statement. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and the U.S. Forest Service were unable to complete their final review under the previous schedule. Polymet is proposing a $600 million open-pit mine near Babbitt and a processing center at the old LTV taconite mine north of Hoyt Lakes. A Wisconsin Assembly committee has scheduled a public hearing on a bill that would restrict public access to a potential iron mining site near Lake Superior. Gogebic Taconite wants to dig a huge iron mine in the Pinocchio Hills east of Mellon. About 3,500 acres around the site is open to the public through the state's managed forest program. The company fears protesters are taking advantage of that access to harass mine workers. The bill would establish 600-foot restricted zones around mining equipment and roads on the site. A judge has ordered a Duluth head shop where synthetic drugs were sold to remain closed for at least 1 year. Judge Sean Flerke issued a permanent injunction this week in the city of Duluth's nuisance lawsuit against The Last Place on Earth. The Duluth News Tribune reports the judge ordered Jim Carlson, who is owner, not to sell synthetic drugs within the city. Carlson cannot reopen his downtown store for 1 year and is prevented from selling synthetics out of any other location in Duluth. The store has been closed since the judge issued a temporary injunction back in July. Carlson remains jailed while he awaits sentencing after being found guilty of 51 federal offenses in October. The Minnesota Department of Agriculture has captured a record number of gypsy moths this year. The department says 69,400 gypsy moths have been trapped in Minnesota this year. That number is expected to rise as the department collects the 14,500 insect traps set out this spring. Minnesota's previous record high was 27,858 moths caught in 2009. Trapping is not meant to control the invasive pest, but counting the number of moths caught in the traps gives department officials a sense of the size and location of the gypsy moth population. Over the next few weeks, the department will search for reproducing gypsy moth populations. Those searches will be done in Lake and St. Louis counties in northeastern Minnesota. If receipts from the 1% countywide sales tax are any indication, 2013 has been a pretty good year. As of the 1st of September, cumulative receipts were 11.4% ahead of those over the equivalent period last year and 22% ahead of 2011. The good news, however, does not come as a complete surprise to Brady Powers, Cook County Auditor-Treasurer. According to Powers, collection of the tax began in May of 2010, so there were already months of accumulated receipts before the first bond was issued in the fall of the same year. Collections from May 2010 through April 2011 averaged $1.1 million compared to a peak of $1.2 million from the previous bond issue, which ended back in 2007. This indicated strong revenues despite the economic downturn of 2008.
My expectations were, well, this is going to probably continue to grow safely and maybe even better than safely, but we cut back our estimates even less than what we expected. So we were only putting a little over a million, not a million one or a million two, but a little over a million were our estimates as far as issuing the bonds.
As for the 2013 increase over 2012, Powers offered a couple of explanations. One is an increase in tourism and consequently in lodging revenues.
The same ones who've reported to this point of this year as of last year were up about 6.7%. And since they're paying the sales tax, that's a healthy part of that.
The other factor he highlights is an increase in construction activity around the county, citing major projects such as the Whole Foods Co-op and the broadband fiber optics installation, as well as general construction.
The general construction, if not new homes, but construction is going on. I hear a lot of the carpenters are busy, and I see some of it. People are adding on a deck, doing repairs, putting on roofs, stuff that they probably put off for a few years with the recession. So some of that is kicking in too.
Based on schedules of the current projects funded by the 1% monies, 90% of the $20 million total will be dispersed by the end of 2014, with the county obligation on the later of the two bond issues extending out to 2035. If receipts continue along their present trajectory, Power sees an opportunity to perhaps shorten that.
Even though we're very comfortable with the revenue coming in, you really don't want to have that much debt out there. So it's really nice to be able to pay them off early in case there are other things that the commissioners want to do.
You've been listening to the North Shore Weekend News Wrap-Up. To hear more from the WTIP News team and to check out the full versions of our stories, visit us at WTIP.org. For North Shore Community Radio, I'm Jay Anderson, wishing you a great weekend.